powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy.
Where's poor little Willa going to go to college?
Best snapshots in the biz right here.
I like the ones that Curtis just randomly, what?
You gotta be kidding me.
Are you joking right now?
Well, I mean, if you did put money down on Rich Strike, I'd
be... bad news for you guys. Something tells me that you're going to be able to maybe get that money back. Who knows? Don't gamble. That's your answer there.
Real rich coming from you, Stacey.
Are the Seahawks emotionally attached to Drew Lock in this upcoming quarterback battle? It's a fair question. Here's what Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times had to say.
I think what they'd like to have happen is Drew Lock, you know, show that he can really be the guy that they thought coming out of the draft in 2019 when they apparently were really impressed by him. And maybe would have liked to have found a way to draft him that year if they could have, and you know, have him so that he could be the guy that they thought he was. So that's how I kind of view it. It's, you know, it's going to be his job to lose, and if that happens, then I think they're going to have to reassess what they do, sort of with the long term future of the quarterback position. You know, if not, then I think they're going to feel a lot better about where they're headed as a franchise.
Until Drew Lock is taking snaps from under center in week one of the regular season, I will be convinced that Geno Smith is going to be this team's starter. I don't know why. It just feels like that's the case. It feels like that's what Pete Carroll might want to have happen. I don't know, but they are genuinely, I think, more high on Drew Lock than the national audience seems to think. I think people from a national perspective were very surprised that the Seahawks didn't take a quarterback. I don't think any local reporters or certainly anyone with this team were that shocked to see it, though.
No, I agree with you that the Seahawks do have a very strong feeling on Drew Lock in terms of what they believe he can be. And that is why I've argued to you and have stated to you that this organization truly wants Drew Lock to take this opportunity and run with it. Because his upside, his playmaking ability, his talent, his arm strength, all of that is very enticing. And you've seen it at different points in his career, whether it's, you know, the first couple games of his rookie season when he got the opportunity. What was that? The last six games or five games, sorry. The last five games of his rookie season when he got to start, how he tore it up, seven touchdowns, three interceptions, 64 completion percentage, and really, really looked good, looked strong. The following year was a big disappointment. 57.3 completion percentage, 16 touchdowns, 15 interceptions, made a bevy of mistakes. It just was not, it did not look good. And then the following year, he loses out in a competition to Teddy Bridgewater and, you know, had some high moments, had a lot of low moments as well in his final season. So right now, what you're getting is a player who has been hurt by failure, okay? He has been hurt by failure. He's going through adversity. He's trying to figure out if he can play in this league or not, right? And convincing yourself that you can play in this league. And so now you have to go out and actually do it on a consistent basis every single day. Mm-hmm. You've had your process called out. Hey, Drew Lock didn't know the playbook as well as he should have. Drew Lock as a leader wasn't as mature as he needed to be. And right, wrong, or indifferent, those were the things that were being pointed out by people on the outside, but more importantly, people within the building there in Denver. Can he use that opportunity to change his process, to learn, mature, and grow and say, you know what, the way that I handled my first 3 years as a pro is not the way that I'm going to do it now here in Seattle, now that I'm given this new opportunity. I believe that the Seahawks want to see that happen desperately, but they are, I don't know. I agree with Bob that the emotional side of the trade, it would be a nice feather in the cap for the Seahawks to say, you know what, in this trade for Russell Wilson, not only did we get draft picks, but those players that we acquired that everyone just kind of scoffed at,
they were great.
They had really good roles for our team. Noah Fant was a really good tight end for us. Shelby Harris is a leader and a very, very good defensive player, which, by the way, I believe he is.
Also, Harris slipping under the radar, let me just say.
He is. He definitely is. But Drew Lock actually turned into a good quarterback for us. Doesn't mean he needs to be a Pro Bowler. Doesn't mean he needs to be considered one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. But he works for our system, mm-hmm. and he can be that point guard that they keep referring to and keep talking about. That would be a nice feather in their cap in regards to that trade moving on from Russell Wilson. I don't believe, though, that that is going to be the reason why Drew Lock makes the start. And much to your point, that Pete Carroll values winning football so much that he's just not going to throw out there Drew Lock just to try it, just to see it.
Yeah, he'll have to earn it.
He's got to earn it, knowing that he's got a veteran in Geno Smith that's been in his program for multiple years and has played games for him and played three games for him while Russell Wilson was out. So I think that this conversation's interesting, where, you know, emotionally, could they be tied to Drew Lock? Yeah, I think so. And yes, I could see them really wanting him to take over that responsibility. But ultimately, that's going to be up to Drew Lock. That's going to be up to him to go out there and execute and do his job at a high level and to change his process on and off the field as a pro. That's going to be on Drew. I don't think the Seahawks ultimately are going to shove it down everyone's throat and play him no matter what. I don't see that happening.
Yeah, again, you and I are kind of on different. It's a very slim difference. It's the difference between it's Drew's job to lose versus Drew's job to win, is how we see it. With me thinking that Geno Smith is probably going to be the starter for this team unless Drew can prove that it should be him. With mm-hmm. with from your point of view, it being Geno is there. If this doesn't work out and it doesn't pan out, then that's fine. But that it is ultimately
he's the fallback
guy.
Drew,
yeah, exactly.
He's their insurance policy.
Exactly. Ultimately, though, I don't know that it's being emotionally attached to Drew Lock in this quarterback battle. I think that they are higher on Drew Lock than many people think, and I think that there is a fairness to that with context. What I mean by that is this: that saying, they're emotionally attached to Drew Lock and they're higher on Drew Lock than people think. I don't know that that would necessarily be the case if this were a fantastic quarterback class. If the Seahawks entered, or even a quarterback offseason, if the Seahawks entered this draft class and it was 2023, where you've got potentially four guys taken in the top 10 next year, I think that Seattle gets their quarterback. I think they might even trade up to get their quarterback. I think that John Schneider is a guy who, when he's set on a quarterback, and he has a good track record of at least being interested in a couple guys, that he will make up his mind and he'll go for that guy. And I think that they are high on Drew Lock, in part because Drew Lock is one of the better young options they had from a very weak quarterback class and a not so great quarterback offseason, where mm-hmm. there weren't a ton of options. I mean, Baker Mayfield remains your best option on the market, and it's Baker Mayfield. If you traded for him, you'd be paying $19 million for him to be your starter, and that's in the final year of his contract.
Right. I don't disagree with any of that what you said, and that's why I have a hard time hearing people say, well, Drew Lock, you would have been the number one guy taken in this draft. Yeah, when he came out.
Yeah, one guy was taken in the first round.
That's not a great bar to set against. You know, this is one of the worst quarterback drafts that we've seen in quite some time.
I am the tallest in a group of fourth graders.
Right.
Maybe.
But also that Drew Lock has had history in the NFL, right? And you can look at that as a positive or a negative. On the negative side, you'd say, hey, yeah, his talent's there, but how has that translated to the NFL level?
I mean, that's what's so interesting about it is because he's
not
so
good.
Young. If he was 8 years into the league, you'd be like, he's washed, he's done, it didn't work out. That he was so great in college and hasn't worked out, but is only three or so seasons in, I think people are like, well, maybe. Mm. Maybe he could do it. Now, whether or not you listening personally think that is one thing, but you can see why objectively someone might have the benefit of the doubt there.
Right. The hard part is that, you know, he's getting the benefit of doubt from a system perspective, not from a talent perspective.
Yeah, that's
he
true.
Came
like,
from an offense. He came from an offense that had a lot of talent around him, and there was no question about that, but it was a coaching question. Did the coaches handle him right? Did they put him in the right system? Did they do everything they could to set Drew Lock up for success? And can Seattle do a better job of doing that? That is a question that Drew Lock is going to answer for folks in this offseason and as he works to earn a starting job. On the positive side, okay, talked about the negative. On the positive side is you look at Drew Lock and say, yeah, he's struggled. He has struggled in this league, but he's also had bright moments. He's also had bright moments in this league, and he's played NFL football.
And you've watched a few of those. I've seen you in the sports pit watching tape.
Yeah, it's and you can see it. You can see him being a part of a true under-center play-action style of game where they're using him out in bootleg scenarios or deep play-action passes. If you have an effective running game and can pair Drew Lock successfully with that, he's got the arm strength. He can make every throw. He can do those things, but you've got to consistently put him in positions to be successful because he will quickly make decisions that are head scratching. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that you got to worry about with Drew Lock as you get into a 17 game season. And is he going to make the right decision and put this team in good position to win ball games? That's the one thing for anybody that wanted to knock Russell about any aspect of his game. The one thing you can't really, except for the 2020 stretch where it was, gosh, when was that? Cardinals, Buffalo Bills, and then the Rams, I think the three back-to-back games where he had that stretch of turnovers we'd never seen. The guy took care of the football. And that is what perfectly fit into what Pete Carroll wants from his quarterbacks. So Drew Lock and Geno Smith have to be better in that area. But Drew has played NFL games. And having that experience and drawing on those experiences, the good and the bad, can help him in this transition into a new offense, into a new system, into a new scheme. And you don't have to work with somebody and draft a young rookie and try to start from scratch. And I think that that is also one of the positives of the trade and acquiring Drew Lock and how they're approaching him, moving forward throughout the offseason. And there might be some emotional attachment wanting this to work out, but that's not going to be the reason why he is the starter.
This hour of Jake and Stacey's brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the
first
game.
Down, Jake, top three young Seahawks you want to see have a great offseason.
All right, young Seahawks, not rookies, but younger Seahawks. Number one, Drew Lock, who we just talked about. Drew Lock to me is a big, big X factor for this team in regards to how well he can transition to a failed experience in Denver to now getting a new opportunity here in Seattle where the energy is fantastic, where they embrace who you are as long as you come in to work every single day and you're on top of your stuff. I think that is going to be the challenge for Drew Lock to show that he can be a pro's pro and handle his business and take care of the football the way Pete Carroll wants him to take care of the football. But if Drew Lock can have a fantastic offseason and if he can go win this starting job, he can help this offense and be a dynamic weapon to offset what they do in the running game, because he can make all the throws. He can get the ball to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett down the field. He can throw with anticipation over the middle of the field. He can do some of these things that they are wanting him to do in Shane Waldron's offensive scheme and system, but he has to grow up. He has to be able to take that next step as a passer, as a leader, and that is what I want to see from him throughout the offseason. The second guy, D. Eskridge, a Daryl Taylor-like rookie season, where due to injury, wasn't able to see his full talent and realize his full talent and be a contributor for the team in the way that they wanted him to be his rookie season. I do believe that D. Eskridge brings a lot to the table as a returner and as a third receiver in this offense. If you can get him going, he has a positive, healthy offseason. I think that you could see D. Eskridge have a really, really nice role for this team.
So you got Drew Lock, D. Eskridge. Who's number three?
Number three is Trey Brown. Cornerback Trey Brown, I want to see him have a very, very good offseason this year. That means making plays in OTAs, in training camp, in the preseason, separating himself and building upon the four games that he had during the season where everyone saw him as a rookie and said, man, this guy can be a bright spot. This guy can take over one of the cornerback spots and be one of the guys you can count on for the Seahawks over the next, you know, however many years. I want to see Trey Brown assume that leadership role with the cornerback room. I want to see him take that step in a positive direction. And we have heard that hey, with this procedure that happened on his knee early in the offseason, that, hey, this is going to help Trey Brown be the healthiest that he has been in quite some time. I want to see that come to life this offseason.
Second down. Jake, something is happening in Boston. So what in the world is going on with the New England Patriots offensive coordinator situation? Fill us in here.
I don't know if I've seen anything like this.
Oh,
and
this
leave it
intriguing.
To Bill Belichick.
Okay.
Do you know who the New England Patriots offensive coordinator right now is since replacing Jason McDaniel?
Do they have one?
No, they do not.
Don't need one.
They do not have one at the moment.
Because you have checks notes and former defensive coordinator.
Bill Belichick is asked about this, and you know what his response was?
Don't need one.
I'm not big into titles.
It's 2022. We don't need to put a title on everything.
Are you kidding me?
I love that answer.
Also, this is only something like the greatest coach of all time could get away with.
Yes.
I'm not big into titles.
This is also something that sounds like someone who like doesn't want to admit that you're dating, but like it's like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not big into titles. Like,
okay.
It's just, it sounds like dodging accountability for something.
So here is the conversation right now going on. Not only is he refusing to name an offensive coordinator, but right now it's being reported by Mike Reese, who's a beat reporter for ESPN there in Boston, does a fantastic job. He is saying that behind the scenes, it is going to be an open competition of sorts throughout training camp between...
Stop.
Between none other...
Betwixt.
Joe Judge.
No.
Oh, you say no. Just you
build the entire
wait.
Offense out of punt returners.
Between Joe Judge and...
No.
Matt
no.
Patricia.
No!
Matt Patricia.
Oh.
Matty Patty.
Failed head coach
Patty.
With the Detroit Lions and former defensive coordinator prior to that with Bill Belichick in New England. So he would
build
be making the
whole plane out of defensive coordinators.
He would be making the transition from defensive
Don't
coordinator
give Pete Carroll any
to
ideas.
Offensive coordinator. Now, there
offensive
are
coordinator.
there are in the history of the NFL coaches that have switched sides and you know been an offensive coach, transition to defense and be successful and all that. But my gosh, this seems like a really bad situation. And especially for someone like Mac Jones, who's going into his second year and needs to grow and needs to develop and this offense needs to transition. Yeah, I mean, gosh, this is a really bold strategy by Bill Belichick. And if this does not go well, if this situation goes up in flames and the offense is not able to progress, I mean, he's not going to get a whole lot of wiggle room on this one. I mean, this is a very bold strategy for him, and neither of these guys have any history of being successful offensive coordinators
Does
in this league.
So offensive this coordinator even matter when
this
you've
scary.
Got checks notes, Mac Jones at quarterback. No. Third down. You were talking about rolls, Jake. What about
Can't
rolls?
Believe it. I'm still flabbergasted by this.
Thanksgiving rolls? Pizza rolls.
What role do you want to see Boye Mafe have?
What role do you want to see Boye Mafe have?
What role I want to see him have is I want to see him be a high-level pass rusher in this rotation for the Seahawks. The truth of the matter is that Daryl Taylor and Uchenna Nwosu are going to be your two starters on the edge. You paid Nwosu $10 million per year over the next 2 years. Daryl Taylor obviously has grown and flashed as a potential star in this league, and you're going to give him every opportunity to continue that role. Boye Mafe, the big thing that you heard coming out of rookie minicamp, on top of what was already said when they drafted him, is, hey, he's going to have to transition a little bit into a different role, into a different style, and we want him to not be a pure outside linebacker in a 3-4 scheme. We want him to be an edge rusher. And so we need to polish him up. We need to help him transition into that role. And I think for Mafe, he is explosive. He is dynamic. He is athletic. But that is going to take some time. That is going to take some time for him to really grow as an NFL pass rusher. But I think that the best thing that you can do for him is to put him in situational football, into good situational football where he can do what he does best and allow him to have a role, perfect that role before you expand it. And that's why I think as a rotational pass rusher this year, that should be the expectations for Boye Mafe. Don't expect him to be a starter for this team this year. That's okay. It's all about rotational depth, and I think Mafe can fit that bill very, very well. But it's going to be a big question as to how well he can transition himself into an NFL consistent or transition into a consistent NFL pass rusher.
Fourth down. All right, Jake, how the turns have tabled. You made fun of me earlier for my amazing idea for hearty Pop-Tarts.
Wait. How the turns have
exactly
tabled?
Right. Chicken pot pie, barbecue chicken dumpling, chicken quesadilla, potato, all great ideas. And I think all of those are great ideas, but you made fun of me. What is something you love, a food item you love, a recipe you love, a way you like to eat something, like a certain sandwich or something that most people think is disgusting?
I think it's disgusting.
Yeah, most people are like, are you serious?
I'm a picky eater.
You are a very picky eater, but you got to think of something.
There's nothing that I do that's gross.
That's not true. That's not even, we're texting Brooke. Brooke?
I'm serious. There's nothing that I do with my food that is gross. I am someone that doesn't like to mix my food unless it's meant to be mixed.
I really hope Brooke texts you to remind you of something you do that's gross during the break.
There's nothing.
I guarantee that's not correct.
I am very particular and meticulous with how I eat my food.
There's like an inch between every food item on
yes.
the plate.
Yeah. Unless it's meant to be mixed. Like it's gravy with potatoes or it is a... You know, that is a part of the meal, is to mix it in a bowl.
You don't like ketchup on mac and cheese, something like that, that most people don't like?
No. It's an abomination.
There's got to be something, Jake.
Nothing. I mean, the only thing I could think of that it's not gross at all, it's amazing, is putting, you know, over easy yolk over my hash browns. Like, that's the best way to do it. That's not gross. That's just the right way to do it.
Regular thing.
Exactly.
I know. Curtis, I'm not pleased with what we have. That's the only thing
that I do.
We'll find something.
There's nothing.
Jake and Stacey,
you will not find any dirt on me.
We will. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Aaron Goldsmith's call of Nick Castellanos' home run Tuesday night paid tribute to our favorite running joke. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. I know the NFL schedule release is all over yours, and don't worry, we're going to get to it. The NFL announced the strength of schedule, not the actual schedule. I'll tell you where the Seahawks fall and who has the hardest and easiest schedule. Seahawks, neither the hardest nor easiest, but I'll tell you where they fall. Before I get to that, though, let's jump back to Tuesday in MLB, specifically for the Mariners. You guys remember one of our original calls, our original favorite calls of all time, because it came during Tom Brenneman's very awkward apology during a Nick Castellanos home run.
I pride myself and think of myself as a man of faith. As there's a drive in a deep left field by Castellanos, it will be a home run. And so that'll make it a 4-0 ball game. I don't know if I'm going to be putting on this headset again.
That's never not funny.
Still kills.
Never
still
not. Good. Still
Two
every
years
time.
Later.
Nick Castellanos got a home run on Tuesday, by the way. This was Aaron Goldsmith's call.
Club to left field. Winker picking up speed. Winker at the wall, and it's gone. Castellanos for the deep drive to left, and he puts the Phillies on the board, 3-1 at the top of the fifth.
Aaron knew exactly what he was doing. That's what I'm talking about, Goldie.
No way Aaron didn't know exactly what he was doing.
Heck yeah. I love it.
Typical Wichita sassiness is what that is.
Oh, is that what you're going to call it?
Wichita sassiness. Yeah.
That is amazing. I mean, any chance you get a... You get an opportunity to do that. How does every broadcaster not take that opportunity? If Castellanos, like, you got to be dreaming, like, please hit it into deep left field. Hit it into deep left field so I can say this. Hats off to Aaron Goldsmith for capitalizing on his opportunity.
All right, let me get to that strength of schedule. So the NFL regular season schedule. Oh, did you want
to? Can I interrupt this? Because yeah. I have to tell the people something.
Yeah. Oh. Sure. Okay.
Okay. So you know that we enjoy our home improvement opportunities.
Oh, this entire
as a show, right?
This entire show texts each other whenever we go to Home Depot.
Okay. So Home Depot is
a sacred place.
It is.
A sanctuary.
And we enjoy it,
yes,
very much so. Like, the Home Depot theme song is also like a hype music to this show.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Curtis.
There you go.
Like, I feel like Nicolas Cage in Gone in 60 Seconds, just sitting there listening to it before. Let's ride. Let's go. So, anyways, so home improvement. I was told to, I needed to thatch my lawn. Have you ever heard of this? Have
yes.
you heard of thatching your lawn?
Have I heard? You're talking to two people
okay.
who frequent the Depot.
Okay. Have you ever done it?
I don't know that that's any of your business.
Okay. Well, I have.
No,
and
I
let
haven't.
Me tell you that it is one of the most satisfying
Curtis,
things that,
have,
that has ever happened to me. Okay? Mowing your lawn, I thought
was... I found
was...
an hour-long stream of the Home Depot theme song.
Jake, go for it.
I thought that mowing your lawn was just like a great, satisfying
sure.
thing to do.
Sure is. It's like vacuuming the outside.
Well, thatching is even better because you just, you get the, you know, you get, you know, part of that part of your lawn that you need to, you know, the dead mix of grass that you have or moss, and we had a lot of moss in our backyard, and I borrowed my brother-in-law's thatcher, and it was unbelievable how much we had to
get
churn
thatched.
Up. Yes. Oh, thatched we did. It was like almost, I had so much moss in my backyard that I almost like had to like step, it shoots out kind of like in the back. I almost had to like, I was like taking over a step. That's how much was coming up. But it was amazing.
Curtis,
has anybody else thatched out there? Can anybody attest to this experience?
What I need to know is the most mundane house task that you actually love doing. Mine would be vacuuming and mowing the lawn. There's something so satisfying about the clean lines you can create with both of those things.
That is very
true. I've never thatched.
Okay.
But vacuuming and
okay.
mowing the lawn,
thatching,
that's where it's at.
Thatching, it creates those lines, and it's way more addicting.
What?
I'm telling you. You've got to try it. Random task that I like to do around the house. I don't know if there's any of them that I like to do, but everything that becomes a norm in the Heaps household is like Brooke and I have to pick up the absolute storm that has occurred in our house every single day. And we don't have like a big house. So any of the things that the kids do, you know, at all in our main area is just going to be totally filled with toys. So like, it has just become the nightly ritual of picking up the mess that is everywhere.
I love just throwing things away. Oh, it's the best.
That's what my stepdad used to do when we were little, is he would be like...
Oh, just throw things away that you didn't use?
No, things that I did use. So like if I left, for instance, if I came home and I took off my shoes and I left them in the hallway, the next day I'd be looking for my shoes and I would say, has anyone seen my shoes? And he'd say, I threw them away. And I
wow.
would say, why did
I'm
you throw
like
my
that.
Shoes away? And he would say, because you left them in my hallway. And
what?
Yes. You could
he
not.
Would literally throw them away.
He's very old school.
Wow. Okay.
Literally, I went to get my shoes and they were in the garbage bin.
Speaking
outside.
Of throwing things away, Curtis, taking a cardboard box apart
oh, yeah,
and putting in the
down.
Recycling.
Oh,
oh
that's
man.
The worst. No, that's a bottom
that's
five worst thing. No,
no it's,
worst
a, things, it's a great
number
feeling.
Number one, loading and emptying the dishwasher, specifically emptying the dishwasher. Number two, breaking down cardboard. I hate breaking down cardboard. It cuts your hands. It's deadly. It can be very dangerous.
Yeah.
I think you're doing it wrong, Stacey.
Or you don't have the strength to
rip. Oh, power washing,
rip?
The number one answer right now
oh,
on the
of course.
Mac and Jack's text line. Of course. Who doesn't love power washing? All right. Let me quickly get to strength schedule here.
All right, fine.
We've gone way off the rails.
Sorry. I just had to talk about my thatching experience, and it was amazing.
I understand, and you were right to do that. You were right to come to us with this. The 2022 NFL schedule release is going to be today at 5 p.m. You can hear that during Wyman and Bob when we'll find out exactly when the Seahawks will be playing all of their games and against whom. We already know the road and home opponents, but obviously none of those primetime games, etc. The NFL, though, while it hasn't released the schedule, has released the strength of schedule. The team playing the toughest schedule in the NFL, the Los Angeles Rams, opponent win percentage of 567. The team playing, actually, let me do this third. The Seattle Seahawks, any guess as to where they come in? You can guess top half or bottom half in difficulty first.
Where the Seahawks are?
Yeah, top half or bottom half in difficulty.
I'm going to say, I'm going to say top half.
Top half.
Yeah, I'm going to say top half.
They have the 11th most difficult schedule.
That's not bad, though.
Not too bad.
Which is weird because they should have been getting a quote-unquote fourth-place schedule because they finished in fourth last
year. But you're still technically playing against two really good teams. So the San Francisco 49ers and Los Angeles Rams and Arizona Cardinals are all going to have some of the more difficult schedules, and then obviously you're playing these teams that are all projected to be better than you. So by virtue of playing those six games in your division, you're going to have a tougher schedule. The four easiest schedules belong to the same division. The NFC East. In order.
What division was that?
The NFC East.
Oh, no. Well, this classic East Coast bias. It's exactly. Right in front of our eyes. Wake up, sheeple.
That's exactly what it is. Sheeple. The easiest schedule in the NFL next year belongs to the Washington Commanders. The second easiest schedule belongs to the Dallas Cowboys. Third, the Eagles. And fourth easiest schedule, the New York Giants.
Okay, so if you're a conspiracy theorist like Curtis, you're saying it's classic East Coast bias and
the fix is in.
Or you could just look at the fact that that is arguably one of the worst divisions in football and say they are graded as the easiest schedule because they all stink. So, I mean, there's a couple different ways to
look at this.
It starts
the way at the top.
At the top.
Don't encourage him.
With Roger Goodell.
Don't encourage this man.
Number one Cowboys fan.
Manhattan office, sipping on sparkling water, eating bonbons.
Sparkling water is delicious.
Oh, Stacey, you know
they call him Roger LaCroix Goodell. That is the difficulty of schedule. We're going to get to the rest of the stories in the
NFL. I cannot wait to break down the schedule. You guys have no idea how excited I am.
We're going to have to wait until tomorrow to do that.
I will have the wins and losses dialed in for the Seahawks. Book them right now. I will have it all ready to go. Order your pizza. God. Order your chicken wings, Stacey, because it is going to be a party tomorrow on the Jake and Stacey show.
By the way, Jake and I have a bet going for tomorrow. You guys think I have a gambling problem?
I mean,
No. Well, let me tell you about it next, because it does have something to do with the NFL schedule. Don't go anywhere.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners have an off day today while they travel to the East Coast to take on the New York Mets. And since it's an off day, you know what that means. Tune in today to Seattle Sports Station, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. for Extra Innings, hosted by, I haven't heard of this person before. His name, I hope I'm saying this right, Curtis Rogers.
Wow.
Curtis Rogers, is hosting
that's
Extra
me.
Innings, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Thanks,
and that's
Tracy.
Around the diamond.
Tracy Frost.
Brought to you by
their terrible
Shane
food
Company.
Takes.
I don't have terrible food takes. No, you guys. Curtis's show is amazing. It's a great way to spend the evening for all of you Mariners fans who are fiending for your Mariners
just
news, for your baseball
light a
news.
Fire, kick back.
Great interviews. Do you know what you have planned already tonight, or are you just going to wing it live?
No. No show sheet.
No show sheet. No, we've going got in it, blind.
We've got Anthony DeComo of MLB.com, who covers the Mets. We're going to talk some Kelnick Robinson Cano trade, because that's who the Mariners play next. Brandon Gustafson joins me as well, so we're going to have some fun.
Oh, okay,
Brandon's
there we go.
Wonderful. He knows a ton.
He is wonderful. And seriously, you're not going to find any better content to find here at night, but also for the Mariners. So. Our boy Curtis Rogers holding it down.
So. That being said, so
tune
again,
in.
7 to 9 p.m. tonight, you know where to get your Mariners fix. Extra Innings, hosted by Curtis Rogers. Let's jump to MLB headlines. Taking a look around the league, here we go. Robinson Cano, a reunion with Seattle. It won't happen with the Mets, but it could happen with the Padres when they travel to San Diego later this summer in July. Padres, by the way, coming up to Seattle in September. Robinson Cano might be signing with San Diego. What do you guys make of that?
It's really funny. On one level, you sit there and wonder what that exchange is going to be like. Is it going to be a Gene Segura level of production from Robinson Cano in terms of payback? Or is Robinson Cano even going to be there? Is he going to find a way to be hurt or, get another PED stint in suspension from Major League Baseball. But overall, I think this is a good move by the Padres. Why not? I mean, the entire time over the last couple of years, they've been extremely aggressive in their approach, trying to compete in the National League. And if Robinson Cano can stay healthy and kind of play a role as a DH, then I think it could be a really, really solid role for the Padres to give to Robinson Cano. I don't think there's really any downside there.
Now, this will interest you guys. Who are the MVP frontrunners so far? That's what MLB Network was wondering. They looked at the following numbers. So 64 votes are tallied, obviously, each in league. So you got the American League, National League. So 64 votes per to look and see, you know, who's the favorite so far. No surprise here, especially with the Angels record. The favorite, odds-on favorite right now for DraftKings as well, Mike Trout to be the American League MVP right now. He's the front runner. You also got Jose Ramirez for the Guardians, Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. getting votes. But listen to this. Others receiving votes, Wander Franco, Byron Buxton, Taylor Ward, they get two first-place votes apiece. Also in there, J.P. Crawford and Ty France.
I mean, deserving.
They each got one vote. But
deserving.
Well, where would the Mariners be without those guys?
Honestly?
Would they have a win?
Not looking good, Bob. I mean, it really would be a bad, bad position right now without Ty France and J.P. Crawford, and they have been sensational so far to start the year. It really has been fun to watch those two guys, you know, either be consistent or come into their own. When in the case of J.P. Crawford, I've been so happy for him because this has been a long road coming as a former, you know, top prospect who did not work out with the Phillies to now find his home here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And then know the level of energy and work ethic that he brings to the table for this clubhouse. It's just really fun to watch this happen for J.P. Crawford and Ty France. So just hope more people can come along and join the party, Stacey.
Look, I'm doing it, okay? I'm trying. Now, what you need to be listening to at 7 p.m. tonight is the Extra Innings Show hosted by Curtis Rogers. But before then, you have a slate of MLB games to choose from if you want to get your fix. Astros Twins, Reds Padres, Royals Rangers, Yankees White Sox, and then at 7 p.m., Phillies Dodgers. Any of those pique your guys' interest? Want to check in on the Astros? Maybe you want to take a look at the Yankees and White Sox. Could always be a fun one. Obviously, the Dodgers and Phillies might be interesting.
I think the
Dodgers 20-9 and somehow crazy. Not meeting expectations for some fans.
Just
20-9.
It's insufferable.
Reds got 7 wins though.
It's insufferable.
Good on them.
I would say that the game that I would be most interested in out of any of those is going to be the White Sox game.
Yeah, agreed.
You know, I mean, it's a good matchup. Those are two good teams. I just, that one is the one that piques my interest the most, by far.
You mean you're not going to be tuning into Reds Pirates later tonight?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I might have some better things to do, but I don't know. I'm still looking at my calendar, trying to figure that out. But, you know, the White Sox, I mean, you look at what they did, you know, they really struggled coming out of the gate. Now they're 8-2 over the last 10 games. And the Yankees obviously have the best record in the American League. So that's going to be a good matchup. I'm excited to watch that one.
From Fred in Birch Bay, watching the Husky softball team beat ASU while listening to C-Raj tonight.
There we go.
Look, anytime anybody beats ASU in anything, I'm all
Curtis
for
it. Curtis is all for it. He is here for it. He's excited about it. All right, next up here. Now, I'm surprised we haven't talked about this. We'll talk about it more when the Mariners actually travel to take on the Mets. But under the spotlight, Jared Kelnick. How about this trade back in the spotlight? Anthony DiComo writing about that for MLB.com, saying that you're going to hear a lot about Jared Kelnick this weekend, both in Seattle, while Mariners fans wait for him to take off, and in New York, while Mets fans watch and see whether that trade feels like it was worth it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously it would be great to have New York's fans have their hearts ripped out and watch Jared Kelnick just absolutely light it up there in New York. But, you know, part of me is also worried about that because we talk about pressure that Jared Kelnick puts on himself. Is that going to be a series where he is going to be gripping the bat super tight, wanting to show up and perform for that particular series against really, really good pitching? So I'll be curious to see how he handles that. And Jared Kelnick has been a very up and down emotional year so far. And it has not gone his way the way that we were hoping it would.
Now, fair from the 469, with the Reds and Pirates, you might get a good brawl. So if you're looking last second here in MLB headlines, any last minute suggestions for a game?
To liven up
such a poor game? You might be able to get a good fight in that one. Or maybe you'll watch more fishing. Who knows? That could happen there too.
Maybe.
All right. Coming up next, something I'm really excited about and that Jake and Curtis are very excited about as well. Michelle Ludka-Furbush, who is an Emmy Award-winning sports anchor and ambassador for Wise Seattle, is going to join us to talk about a very exciting award in Seattle. It's coming up next.